So continuing yesterday's discussion, Hare Krishna, of the challenge of scientism. This morning in the class, in the purport of Srila Prabhupada's that was read, one of the sentences there was that the materialistic advancement of civilization is called the society of the demons. So that sums it up. We're talking about scientific advancement, and it may seem like advancement, but it's simply demoniac. And many of the things I said yesterday, almost everyone in the world would think, yes, science has really benefited human society by giving all these great advantages. But it is simply the society of the demons. To think the whole idea that we can make the world nicer and better is based on the idea that we're meant to enjoy this world, which elsewhere in this chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that attitude of the demons, Ishvaroham aham bhogi, siddhoham balavan suki, that is summarized, that I am the controller of this, the demoniac thing, I am the controller of this world. We are meant for enjoying this world. We should be powerful and perfect all our activities, and in this way we'll live happily in this world. So the whole endeavor to make this world a better place is mistaken at best and demoniac actually. As regards making comfort for ourselves, there is a narration in Mahabharata and elsewhere of Markandeya Rishi. I believe it was Markandeya, may have been another one. Anyway, he had an extremely long life. That means he would live for as many lifetimes of Brahma as there were hairs on his body. We can't imagine how long is the life of Brahma. 311 trillion years. Of course, people raised in the modern scientific outlook, they wouldn't believe this. But then if we could communicate with the ants, how long does the average ant live? Any biologists here? Not 310, 70 years. Maybe not even 70 days. So if the ant would be told that humans live for so many years, it would be very difficult for them to imagine. So 311 trillion years and a bit more is the lifespan of Lord Brahma. And Markandeya, was it some other rishi, had the benediction that he would live for as many lifetimes as Brahma as there were hairs on his body and his head. And he had one would fall out at the end of every lifetime of Brahma. And then when they were all gone, he would die. And he had a very hairy body and a very hairy head and a very hairy face. So he was doing his meditation in the open air. And someone suggested to him that, well, why don't you make a shelter from the cold and the wind and the rain and the heat? And he said, I'm only here temporarily. That was the whole subject of the discussion this morning, that we're only here temporarily. So why put all our attention into making life comfortable when we're not going to stay here anyway? We get put in a cell and we're told that after a few days we'll be taken out of the cell and shot dead. So in the meantime we think, well, I'll make the cell more comfortable. I'll decorate it, put some flowers, air conditioning. Well, what's the point? After a few days, we're going to get pulled out and shot dead. So that's the situation. We're in this world for this each lifetime. It's a short lifetime, certain to end. So simply trying to make our situation comfortable is foolishness. Of course, it doesn't mean that we should deliberately accept unnecessary difficulty, but the point is that life is not meant for living comfortably, but for making a solution to the real problem, which is repeated birth and death. And in the name of so-called progress, of science and advancement, of civilization, we're forgetting the real point of life, which is to understand that we're not meant to live in this world anyway. We are transcendental by nature. We have nothing to do with this world. There's no real thing as living happily in this world anyway. The idea that we shall be happy by enjoying ourselves, by having comforts and all kinds of technological gizmos to make us happy, instead of having to wash my clothes by hand, if I get a washing machine, I would be happy. Instead of having the dogs wake me up by barking in the morning, I'll get an alarm clock. Yes. But we don't see that people are happier by having these things. So the whole idea, improving the human condition, it's a mistake in the first place, even to think like that. So what shall we say then about, yesterday I read out that huge long, well, it wasn't that huge, it could be much, much longer, things that scientists have discovered that previously people didn't know about. Atoms, molecules, genes, germs, viruses, the whole concept of energy manifest as electromagnetic energy and radio waves, light waves, sound waves. Previously people had no idea of these things, but are people any better off by knowing all these things? Does it help us to get free from birth and death? Not at all. So what shall we say then? It's Maya, it's illusion. It's presenting as knowledge something which isn't really of much benefit to us. Just like, for instance, if I was to inform you all about the mating habits of a certain kind of butterfly that lives in the Andes Mountains, what benefit would it be to you? And even if you get born as that in that species of life in the next life, it still wouldn't be any benefit to you, because by the grace of Paramatma, the butterflies don't have to go to school to learn how to have their mating rituals or whatever. So all this knowledge, it's of no help ultimately to us. If the condemned prisoner takes a crash course on how to decorate his cell, he might think, well, that's good, so I can live comfortably here until they pull me out of here and shoot me. But much better knowledge would be how to escape his cell. Of course, that's also useless unless we get free from birth and death. But it's an analogy. So, yesterday, while discussing this topic, I got up to the point of saying that according to atheistic propaganda, the more people are educated in science, the more they're likely to be atheists, which is probably true. But it doesn't mean that it gives greater credulity to atheism. Because the whole modern scientific ethos is largely atheistic anyway. The whole atmosphere is one of of atheism. So it's like saying that the majority of people who go to theological school believe in God. Well, yeah, you'd expect that. The majority of people who are trained in cooking know how to cook. Okay, well, thanks. I learned a lot. So the majority of people who are trained in atheism, they are atheists. All right. But generally people think that, scientists, must be very intelligent. They know what's going on in the world. That's the general thought. The scientist, they know. We don't know, they know. They talk about bosons and different things like that, and they know what they're talking about. We don't. So it's something like the shamans in previous times. In the present time also, people. Witch doctors, that's the English term that was given for what we might now more charitably call shamans in Africa. So people respected them because they have some knowledge which the ordinary man doesn't have, and he can do things which they can't do because of his higher knowledge. So it's something like that with scientists, that people don't know what they're talking about, but they sound like they're convinced, and they produce things like cell phones and motor cars and space rockets. So it looks like they really know what they're doing. And so the scientist is a respected person. So if we say that most scientists are atheists, people, that seems to give credence to science, to atheism. But if we consider that the whole ethos of science is atheistic. Could I get this? There was a table lamp here yesterday. Could I get that? That was arranged. No. Yeah. Bring it a little closer. So, this idea propagated that scientists, they can explain everything, or if not everything, well, whatever is important to be known. So there's no doubt that scientists have been able to discover many things. They know a lot. Of course, it's not that every scientist knows everything by any means. One scientist in one field may not have the slightest idea about what's going on in another field, or even within two areas of one field. Because science becomes specialized, super specialized, and so one scientist may spend his whole life just working on one very small area. So one scientist may not have any idea what the other's working on, or even there may be scientists who are working on the same area, but they completely disagree on what they see. Scientific theory arrived at by examining the data. The theory is, in science, is a perspective of examining data and explaining data in a manner which fits with the data and which is accepted by many, most, if not all, scientists. But then we find that different scientists have different theories to explain the same data. And to the layman, they can't know which one is right. They disagree. Just like, for instance, the generally accepted description of the universe is that the universe is an expanding universe. So it must have expanded from a big bang. But there are still prior to that, there was a competing theory, the solid state theory, that the universe is just as it is, and it's been like that forever, and it will remain like that forever. And there's still people who believe that. They say that, well, no, the universe isn't expanding. And it's debated. And there appears to be evidence that the reason that the universe is said to be expanding is based on what they call the red shift, which is like the Doppler effect in light, and it shows that the planets are moving further away from each other. But then some scientists have looked through their telescopes and seen that according to the red shifts, it's not that what's perceived as the planets moving away, well, actually, that's not true in all cases. So maybe that's a wrong interpretation of the red shift. So like this, I'm just talking a little bit as a layman about a very specialized field, but just to give the idea that even among scientists, it's not that they're all in agreement with each other. As I've often said, I'll give the same example. Some years ago, I saw in a magazine that among astrophysicists, there are about 2,000 different theories as to the origin of the universe. Then I thought, how many astrophysicists are there in the world anyway? They're probably not more than 2,000 anyway. So it's like they all... Different theory means that na savrishya yasya matam na bhinnam. In the Mahabharata it's stated that one can't be considered a competent philosopher unless he has an opinion different to everyone else. So in science also, if you just say the same as everyone else, or you follow someone else's theory, you're not a very big scientist. So you have to put forward your own theory or your own idea about it. Basically, many of them may have the same theory, but they all have disagreements about this, that, and the other. So, about the details. Or some of them may have more than one theory, and on and on and on. So, to the layman, it appears that they have a lot of knowledge. And in one sense, you can say that's true. We can't deny that science has changed the world in which we live and changed the outlook even of the ordinary man. Even the ordinary man will speak about... If we speak about some, the child is born like this because of some genetic fault, or someone will say, someone will blame someone else, or you're always getting angry and say, what can I do? It's in my genes. So these ideas have entered our way of thinking. We just take it for granted that they're correct. Or just we all take it for granted that there are germs. Previously people thought that diseases were caused by bad spirits, and so you have to worship the spirits to get rid of them, or by... That is not necessarily untrue. But generally we take precaution. People didn't know even that to prevent the spreading of disease, one should wash one's hands, for instance, after, for instance, passing urine. Or even surgeons dealing with, or midwives delivering babies. They deliver in a hospital ward, deliver one baby, go on to the next one without even washing their hands. Why would they bother to wash their hands? Their hands covered in gunk, and it's going to again get covered in gunk. So why should they bother to wash their hand? But they found that simply by washing their hands, the infant fatality rapidly decreased. And so germ theory became born. And we take it for granted. So no doubt the scientists know a lot. They got many things right, but it doesn't mean they got everything right. The idea of the Big Bang being the origin of the universe, this singularity, this fancy word, which means that, well, in the beginning there must have been a Big Bang, and we haven't got the faintest idea how it came, what banged, or why it banged, or how it banged. But anyway, it must have been, because it looks like it. And that is a fundamental belief of atheists. Although the solid state theory is also atheistic, the idea that, well, the universe has always been here, always will be here. So the idea that there was a big bang, and if it happened, it must have just happened without any cause. Kimanyat karma haitukam. What cause? What is behind this world simply than desire anyway? So this is asserted as being scientific. If you don't believe in Big Bang theory, it's not scientific. But what's scientific about saying that there was nothing and then it exploded and we have no proof whatsoever for it? But if you don't accept it, then you're being unscientific. This is the kind of assertion that scientists blame theists for. They say you have no evidence, you just believe it. So it's the shared belief of people who think themselves to be scientific. So again, it's like believing some high priest. So common people, they don't know, they can't understand. So they just accept, well, the scientists, they seem to be very intelligent, they produce so many gadgets and gizmos, and they have big charts, and they can point to the chart and say, well, there was this, the tree of life in the beginning, there was some blob of protoplasm, and then it developed into a bigger blob, and then it became a fish, and then it crawled onto the shore and became a lizard, and then it became a four-legged animal, and it became a human being, and so on and so on and so on. It looks convincing, but there's no proof, and actually it's not very convincing at all. If we think about it. Recently I saw a video presentation which was supposed to show about the evolution of apes to humans, and it showed the primordial ape and his brain and his skull. And then it grew a little bit, and then 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 became the shape of a human skull with a human brain. Dun, 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 dun. With all these functions that are in human, all these parts of the brain that are in the human brain, but not in the ape brain. And we're supposed to, obviously. But how does one part of a brain just come into being? It's extremely complex. And their idea is that all this happens by genetic mutations, which we've never seen such a thing, genetic mutation happen, that an ape progresses from being an ape to being a human. And what kind, even a slight change is very difficult to imagine. What to speak of incredibly complex development of extremely complex organisms, and not just one dut, but dut, 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 many. But they just show it as, it's like a cartoon almost, and then everyone's watching it. Oh, oh, must be true. The scientists said. And so the scientists are mocking that, oh, you believe all these priests, they tell you about this God and this and that, but they're playing the same game. They're presenting something as knowledge without offering any plausible explanation of it and expecting people to believe because they say so. And if we ask them to explain, well, they can't explain it to us. I mean, just like, for instance, they may talk about Higgs boson or such a thing, but if we ask them to explain it to us, they say, no, 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 yeah, you can't understand. It's too complex. You have to be a scientist. So you have to be a high priest. Then, so all you can't understand all this. So they talk all these things, and the common man is just supposed to accept it and believe it. Now, one question is that, well, despite all this atheistic propaganda, then why do people still believe in God, they believe in the supernatural? I often thought that after considering the spread of the Hare Krishna movement in the USSR in the 1980s, I often thought about that since about 1920 or so, that would be 60 years or so, two, three generations, atheism was regularly propagated in the USSR. And although the Orthodox Church went on, it just went on as a puppet of the KGB, just to make sure that there wasn't any real religion going on there. But we found that people were so enthusiastic for theism. Well, how is that? If as Karl Marx said, that religion is the opium of the people, and people who are supposed to be intelligent, they're educated in the principles of atheism, and they've had two to three generations to get this theism, this theistic tendency out of their culture. Undoubtedly, the communism greatly changed the culture of Russia and the other countries that made up the USSR. So, if it's actually reasonable and logical and scientific that there's no God, and it's taught from childhood over three generations, then why are people, and mostly there were the people who were taken to Krishna consciousness were highly educated people, why should that be that they have such a desire for understanding God? If we are logical beings, and logically we're educated to understand that there is no God, then what is it that makes people so enthusiastic to understand God? That was a dilemma for Richard Dawkins and company, and he came up with the idea, it's something went wrong in our genetic development. So we have this, some humans have this gene which makes them feel religious, but it's just something wrong which has to be got out by education. It's pretty poor argument, pretty weak, and we could just easily say there's a gene which make people atheistic. But there's no proof of any such gene. Go find your genes. Pretty poor argument. It would seem like a much better argument that there is an inherent need for people to reach out to God, just like people feel a need to drink water. Why is that? Because the body needs it. Water is a real thing and the body needs it. So why do people have this feeling that we find in every society until they become more developed, atheistic, more sophisticated, maybe that sophistry. That they have they can naturally intuit that there is a higher power. Intuit means, you know the word? Intuition. And we find that people all over the world, they worship spirits, and they may worship a god. There are various levels of God realization. And actually, if we live in natural surroundings, we can understand that it's not, we can just intuit that it's not just some chemicals floating around. There are so many different living beings. If you go to a river and sit by a river and hear the river flow and watch the river flow, you can understand it's not just some water. There's life here. The spirit of the river, the spirit of the forest. So, but people in the mechanical, industrial civilization, their subtle senses are dead, and all they can appreciate is grossness. They have no subtle sense. So the spirits, then above that there are gods, and above that is the Supreme God. Why do people believe in God? Well, one very good... If we take this question from the scientific point of view, one very good hypothesis to answer this question is because there is God. Just like, why do people feel thirsty and want to drink water? Because there's a need for the body to drink water. So why do people feel the need for God? Because there's a need for God. There is God. Same thing, the whole universe. How has it come into being? How is it going on? One very good hypothesis, and all the scientific data which is collected, all the observations that are made, can all be explained by this one hypothesis, that there is a supreme controller. It's a very good scientific theory, actually, but no one will take it as scientific, because the whole scientific endeavor has grown up in the Western world in opposition to religion. So they feel like religion is our enemy. It's the enemy of truth. Which religion in the Western world may have been or continue to be in many ways. A dogmatic religion is the enemy of truth. But then dogmatic scientism is also the enemy of truth. Any dogma that some of the people believe without any good reason, and they want to force that onto others. Any dogma is the enemy of truth. But then there is truth. There is truth. Where is that truth? What is that truth? This we should try to find out. Vedanta Sutra begins. Atato Brahma Jignasa. Therefore, one should inquire into the ultimate reality. King Tad Brahma Kim Adhyatmam, we find in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna asks, what is that Brahma? What is that ultimate truth? What is that spiritual nature? We should try to find out. If we don't know, we're looking through our telescopes and our microscopes, we didn't find out the truth. We don't know. It doesn't mean that everyone is ignorant. An atheist will confidently say, well, there's no God. No one has seen God. How do they know no one has seen God? You haven't seen God. How can you say no one has seen? It's not a scientific statement. It's a dogmatic statement. One reason that people continue to believe in God, as Dawkins et al. Have noted, is it's cultural. They're raised in such a culture. And they tend to believe or accept whatever they're raised with. For instance, most Muslims in the world are Muslims because they were born into a Muslim family. Dawkins doesn't like such statements as Muslim family. Or someone is, most of the Christians were born into a Christian family. Most of the Hindus were born into a Hindu family. We tend to believe whatever we're raised with. So, is it just some cultural phenomenon that we are raised with? It could be supposed like that. And it's a fact that not many people deeply try to understand what is the nature of God, what is the nature of reality. Most people are born a Muslim, live a Muslim, die a Muslim. But why? Well, because it says in the Quran. They don't know what's in the Quran, but someone told them. So, people just tend to go along. And similarly, people who are not very interested in religion, it may be because they're born in such a culture, just like we find in, especially in North Europe, England, much of Scandinavia, much of France, many Australia, Canada, America's a mixed bag. Many atheists there, many theists there also. But many people, they tend not to believe in God, not that they ever sat down and thought, is there God or not God, but because it's largely not really an atheist. Well, atheistic in the sense, not that people are evangelically atheistic, but just like myself, I was raised in a nominally Catholic family, but among the kids I was growing up with, or anyone I was growing up, there was no particular interest in religion. It wasn't anything that anyone spoke about, or it just wasn't part of our life. There was just nothing. There's nothing. Religion? Yeah, you have to go to church on a Sunday until you get old enough to tell your mother, I'm not going anymore. And go to a Catholic school, but like we'd never talk. There was just God and religion, and there was just no interest whatsoever. So people who are raised in such cultures, they may tend to be atheistic, but none of this has any bearing on the actual fact of what is the actual fact? What is reality? Dawkins, he often says, I'm just interested in the truth, but he presumes that he can understand the truth by the scientific method, what they call the scientific method. They just presume that reality consists of what we can observe, which is a very poor hypothesis. Why should we presume that all of that which exists is observable to our extremely limited sensory perception, and is understandable by our extremely small intelligence? And how much can we know? Living for a blip in time. Born, dead. In eternity, how long will we live? 80 years. In eternity, what's that? It's nothing. And we live on a tiny little planet, and for a very short time, we have very little idea what's going on. And we want to say that, yeah, we, by the scientific method, we can understand what is the truth. It in itself is an extremely arrogant statement. It would be more realistic to be humble and say that, well, we are dependent beings. We're dependent on our surroundings, light, heat, water. We're dependent on our surroundings even for the existence of our material body. We're dependent. Even the way we think, we may say it's formed by our culture, but the way our consciousness works, it's not something that, or the very fact that we are conscious, is not something that we by ourselves created. We are dependent beings. So that we can understand the truth just by ourselves, it's a very poor proposition. It would be much more intelligent, actually, just to presume that what is the ultimate reality? That is something which we cannot understand simply by ourselves. If that is revealed to us, then we can understand. So this atheistic propaganda, I'm talking about Dawkins, he's the high priest of modern atheism, and there are others also. So for some time it looked like they were going to sweep the world with their confident atheism, but in the meantime, religion goes on. It's just like Srila Prabhupada said, that there was so much propaganda at one time in India against deity worship coming from Hindus. The Arya Samaj were very much against it, and then Nehru, Pandit Nehru, was very influential as being supposedly Hindu, but actually very much against Vedic culture. And even though they would say that this going to temples, it's all stupid, waste of time, but it never stopped people going to temples. And we'll still find that there are hundreds and thousands of people daily across India. People visit, how many millions of people, hundreds of millions of people visit temples or do some kind of worship at home, despite all kind of propaganda against it. So, atheism is there. It will go on. Just like Krishna said this. Asatyam apratishtam te jagad ahuran ishwaram. Aparaspara sambhutam kimanyat kama haitukam. He said that atheistic people, they don't believe in any ultimate reality. They don't believe there's anything behind the universe. There's no God, there's no controller. Everything simply came into being by chance interactions. And what else is there but lust, desire? So Krishna said this. At that time they were atheists. At the present time they're atheists. In the future they will also be atheists. They'll also be theists. This 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, near the beginning, he says, Dvo bhuto sarge loke smin daiva asura evacha. He said that there are two kinds of being in the universe, the godly and the ungodly. So he describes the godly. Daiva vishtarasho prokta. I already described the godly qualities in great detail prior to this. This is beginning the 16th chapter. So he said, now I'll explain to you the ungodly. What is the nature of the ungodly? So This is what they think. There's no God in control. So they're both kinds of people are there in the universe. Not only on this planet, on other planets also. The godly and the ungodly. Sometimes the roles seem to get mixed. Sometimes people who are supposed to be godly, they act in a very ungodly way. And then the atheists, they say, well, you see, that shows that your belief in God is it's wrong, because people who are talking about God, they do wrong things. But as I discussed yesterday, that's a poor argument. Now, definitely at the present time, in much of the Western world especially, atheism is a rising force, we could say. But then atheism had a big fillip in Russia, a big boost in Russia and this part of the world also. The whole area which was directly or indirectly under the influence of Marxism. So this country was also, well, it was, when it was part of Yugoslavia under Tito, it was it officially atheistic? Or it was officially atheistic. It was officially atheistic, yeah. And atheism made progress, you could say, so that you, many people were atheists. They became atheists, just like that Mataji Revati explained to me, that she's from a Muslim family, but actually they were atheists. So they're atheists, but Muslim atheists. Just like sometimes our devotees in Ireland, Northern Ireland, they would meet people on the street and say, oh, you're Hare Krishna. Are you a Catholic Hare Krishna or a Protestant Hare Krishna? Because in Ireland, you're either a Catholic or a Protestant. And that's how you know whether to shoot someone or to give them a gun to shoot someone else. And they couldn't understand. If you say, no, I'm a Hare Krishna. I'm not a Catholic or Protestant. I'm a Hare Krishna. No, but Catholic or Protestant? Because you must have been one before. So they can't imagine giving up the identity. So definitely, atheism had a big boost in what at the time was called Eastern Europe. But it didn't kill theism. Oh, Tito would be very unhappy to see this camp here, wouldn't he? All his life's work undone. Of course, he'd be unhappy at the whole dismembering of Yugoslavia. Anyway, I'm sure he's unhappy right now. There's one of the 12 Mahajans is making sure that he's not very happy. China also. Anyway, China didn't have a theistic culture. China was Confucianism, Taoism, Buddhism, all mixed up in various degrees. So none of those three cultural forces are theistic. But theism goes, these two will go on side by side, and we can expect that in Kali Yuga, that atheism will continue to increase, and maybe more dangerous is misconstrued theism in the name of God. What goes on, or the misconceptions in the name of theism. Oh, in this highly confused world in which we're living, let's get back to that a bit, highly confused world. Yeah, previously people weren't so much confused. One reason people are so confused, there may be many reasons, but one reason is as consumers, they have so many choices of things to buy and so many desires planted in their heads that they don't know, there are too many things to do, too many options. But and another thing is that previously in society, people grew up in a certain belief system, and that's still true of many people, and they just accepted that and they lived with that and everyone had it. So people weren't confused. They might have had a really lousy philosophy to believe in, like, for instance, that the people who belong to our church, they are saved and everyone else goes to hell. So it may be a very poor belief system, but if everyone around you also believes in it, then you don't get confused. But when there are so many ideas floating around the world, there's so much confusion, no one... Well, I can't say no one, but many people, they just feel a sense of confusion, and with so many ideas about God, then we may think that, well, no one knows anyway. All so many different ideas, so no one really knows, and then. Then we come to this idea that, well, any idea is good as any other. If you believe in God, okay. If you don't believe in God, okay. If you believe that your grandmother is God, okay. Believe anything you like, as long as you don't do any harm to others. That's the idea. That, which is another form of atheism, actually. Unless we have a clear understanding of who is God, if we just say, well, it doesn't really matter whether you believe in just whatever you believe, it's okay. But then again, that makes that man is the measure of all things. And what is the actual fact? What is reality? What is the truth? This we should try to understand. Now, amid all this confusion, we have scientism saying that, yes, science, we'll show you what's right. There's nothing but atoms and molecules and wave particles, and that's all that reality consists of. But many people raised in this, what is called scientific, and which is subtly or not so very subtly atheistic, people raised in this ethos, they have to a large extent opted out of the scientistic understanding. We find even in the modern world where people have a good education, by law you have to go to school and get a good education, understand everything very well, we still find that many people, despite having their so-called scientific education, they believe, for instance, in spirits, witches, ghosts. Some of them believe in Krishna, all kinds of things that you're not supposed to believe in if you've had a good education. Despite the fact that the American Medical Association, the body of doctors, they are not at all approving of natural or traditional medicines. When you say traditional, what do you mean? In Russia, traditional medicine means the Western kind of medicine. That's what I was taught when you say traditional. Because for them, it's the tradition. They killed all the tradition and they made a new tradition. But if we say, just like, for instance, a devotee told me yesterday that his mother is getting cured from cancer by applying hashish oil, which... Now, don't tell me you've got cancer and you need to use hashish oil. Because it also has a... other kinds of effects also. But she has in some cancerous growth in her mouth and is being cured by hashish oil. And you can imagine what happens when you put it in your mouth. Those of you who haven't tried, well, it has various psychotropic effects. But it cures. It's a cure for, can be used to cure cancer. Now, this kind of thing will not be accepted by the medical orthodoxy. By the way, if you do get cancer, hope you don't. But there are cures, for instance, by cow urine therapy, more recommended for devotees than hashish oil. But the point I'm making here is that the medical orthodoxy, they won't accept any such, no, it can't be true. How can it be true that some natural product can cure? Only we can cure with our medicines. That's the idea. They're very, very skeptical. And in America, they want to ban Ayurveda, even in India. There's one doctor I know in Udupi in South India. He learned from his father, who learned from his father, who learned from his father, who learned from his father. Some obscure system of medicine by which he cures all kinds of eye problems. Actually, he collects rainwater and puts something in and says some mantras. And you put the drops and that cures mostly everything. So in the mornings, I used to visit in the morning he'll be treating eye patients, and in the afternoon, fertility issues. Infertility issues. And his, no advertisement, and his clinic will always be full. And there'll be Muslims there and everything. Because it works. Why do people go? Because it works. But the state government wants to close him down. Why? Because he doesn't have a degree in Ayurveda. You have to have a degree. They want to stop quacks. So, well, at least in India, they recognize the Ayurveda. But in America, they want to stop people practicing Ayurveda, and they begrudgingly accept this acupuncture, because in the 1970s or something, President Nixon went to China and one of his aides had some severe gastric problem. It wouldn't be surprising after what they feed you there. But was cured by acupuncture. So they accept, okay, acupuncture. But they don't believe in the whole theory behind acupuncture. So anyway, the point I'm making here, going in a long-winded way, is that there are many fields of traditional knowledge or belief which do not fit into the scientistic worldview. And so they just reject it. But still, there are many people who are well-educated, if they've been well-educated in scientific terms, but they believe it. They've opted out of the scientistic way of thinking. In Dawkins' book, let me give a little background to this. Years ago, before I was mercifully accepted into this movement, I myself thought that, what we're taught at school is, they're not really teaching us all that's correct. Because we find all over the world since time immemorial the stories of ghosts and different kinds of beings and dragons, which makes you think, such things exist. And even in the modern age, there are so many. There are new ghosts also. It's not that all the ghosts are old ghosts, they're new ones. And even in the 1970s, there was an airline crashed, and then whenever the airline flew on that route, it was from Florida to South America, the captain of the flight who had died, he would speak over the intercom system, "Welcome to our flight, passengers." And then he would be seen by the staff, and then all the airline staff refused to go on that flight because the ghost of the captain was kept on coming, and they had to, it was a profitable route, but they had to close it down. So, I surmise that, well, all these beings, the fact that in disparate cultures throughout the world since time immemorial that these are accepted as real makes me think that they're probably real, but we're not supposed to believe in it if we're scientific. So Dawkins, in his God Delusion book, which I read, he explained away ghosts like this. He said, "When I was a child, one evening, I saw some light moving in my room, and I thought, maybe it's a ghost. I was feeling very afraid, but then I boldly got up, and I looked, and I saw that there was some reflection through the trees of the moonlight on the curtain, and that's all it was." And that, friends, explains away all the perception of ghosts since time immemorial, because he thought he saw a ghost, and it wasn't. Not very scientific. So there are many people throughout the world who reject, maybe not openly, they don't march in the streets with banners saying, "We reject scientism," but practically by their actions they do. People, thousands and thousands, will go to Glastonbury in England. It's near to Glastonbury, Stonehenge, at the summer solstice, for some quasi-pagan festival. In this way, the scientism, it doesn't have a stronger hold on people as they think they should have. The idea is that, well, we're teaching science, it makes sense, and still people, they become religious, or they believe in gods and spirits and dragons and different things like that. Why don't they just believe us? So some reasons for that may be, well, maybe it's not very convincing, as they hope it would be. Maybe just as we feel a need for water, we feel a need for God, we feel a need for more than simply the dull materialism that is offered by the scientific worldview, that we just hear, we live, we die, finished. Doesn't satisfy. So Dawkins and company will say, well, it may not satisfy, but that's it, that's the way it is. They don't have any proof that that's all there is, but they presume, and they say that, well, kimanyat kama haitukam. What else is there? What else is there? There's nothing else. One thing I find often in speaking to groups of people who, generally people who come to listen to us, members of the public, they're at least somewhat open to non-materialistic ideas. So I tell them that we are not, I am not, and you are not just a bunch of chemicals. We're more than that. Before I was born, I existed. After I die, will continue to exist. I am not this bag of chemicals called this body. That is not me. That is not you. You are more than that. And many people can accept that and understand that. And another reason maybe that many people are not taken in by scientism is because previously it was propagated that science is going to make the world such a wonderful place. everything's improving by science, but we don't find that the world is such a very happy place. We can say some improvement. To speak to all of you, I don't have to shout and lose my voice. I can use a microphone. So that's some improvement, you could say. But if it's all taken away, we could still talk. But to have this, how much human energy went into making this, all the different discoveries, and then mining iron out of the earth and oil out of the water and making factories to produce it. Maybe it's better just not to have it at all. Now that it's there, we can use it. But is it really making the world such a great, better place? Many people, of course I'm speaking in very general terms here, but many people, even without even directly considering all these things, they just feel that. I don't want to be part of this ethos of just materialism, that just live life, amass different objects that we can use, and there's nothing more than this. That feeling that there must be more than this, which Dawkins puts down to some errant gene, although he has no evidence of it, and he just invents it because he just doesn't like the idea that people could believe in God, so he invents some quasi-scientific theory, just like they've invented dark matter because they can't understand. There doesn't seem to be enough matter in the universe for what they consider should be the amount of gravity that's in the universe. So they invent dark matter. You can't see it, touch it, taste it, smell it, feel it, or hear it. In other words, there's no scientific evidence that it exists, but they presume it must exist. Otherwise, our theories don't work, so we have to invent it. And now they have unseen energy also, because their equations don't fit, so they have to invent this huge amount of unperceived energy within the universe. So, not everyone's very enthusiastic about what science has given to the world. And if you think about it, we can say that science has improved the world so much, but the whole ecological mess that we live in, it wouldn't have happened if it hadn't been for the progress of science, so-called progress. We're told that every day thousands of species become extinct. Probably all the problems of the world could be solved if just one species went extinct. That's Homo sapiens. And the rest of the species could live better. That also is not likely to happen. Another reason that many people don't buy into the whole scientistic ethos is that many people know that there are many things going on which scientists just won't admit to. Just like, for instance, UFOs. There's so, apparently, I mean, I'm not that much into your ufology. In fact, I'm not much into it at all. But there's so much evidence that such things exist, and yet the scientific orthodoxy and the governments, they'll say, no, doesn't exist. And even their reports leak that they themselves know, but publicly they say, no. So people know that they're covering up something. There are things going on which don't fit their theories, and they don't want to admit it. And there are many such things. Crop circles. What's that? It's unexplainable by anything. There's no scientific explanation according to modern science of how that could happen. But mostly the orthodox scientists just ignore it, or they give some lame so-called explanation. But mostly they just ignore it and just hope that it'll go away. But it doesn't go. It keeps on going. And they can't explain it, so they say it's not really happening at all. It's all a big fake, or they just ignore it. Which shows that they're not really searching for the truth. It means they have a dogma which they want to sustain. Something like the church didn't want to accept that the universe is not geocentric. So they said, no, it's not true. We don't believe that. Anyone who believes it gets inquisitioned. But after some time, they had to accept it. But scientists, how can they accept it? Because then they don't have an explanation for it. Now, they don't have an explanation for it. Oh, then it must be something. We don't know. It's something spiritual. Oh, no, they can't accept it. So many things. Many people are aware that ancient civilizations all over the world apparently had advanced knowledge in various spheres, such as, for instance, astronomy. They were able to build, apparently, what was supposed to be at that time highly primitive people with no knowledge of advanced geometry, engineering, were able to build, for instance, pyramids, not only in Egypt, but in many different parts of the world. It's supposed to be in Bosnia, some Egypt, some pyramids, right? Of course, but scientists don't accept that. They say it's just some hill with it's not really a pyramid, it's just some hill. So how they could transport such massive stones when they're supposed to be just some primitive people and place them exactly, precisely in such a way without any heavy engineering gear and with such precision that modern engineering can't do it. How do they explain that? They don't. They prefer not to think about it. Or they give, again, some weak explanation. But they don't like... The fact that angels, or the apparent fact, let's be agnostic here, the apparent fact that ancient civilizations all over the world had advanced knowledge in many areas, it completely goes against the Darwinian theory of evolution, which for them is like, that's the holy scripture. Which, if you go against it, then you're an infidel. But there's so much evidence of so many phenomena which just don't fit in, or prominent phenomena that don't fit into the scientistic worldview, and it's a problem for the atheists. So they're banging their drums and saying, science, science, science. What other things? Dinosaurs still existing in the world today. There's considerable evidence for that. Bermuda Triangle, and so on and so on. Natural healing, folk medicines. So it's clear to many people that what's going on in the name of science, it's as dogmatic as the religion which they are against. It's just dogmatic in a different way, that's all. And they don't want to accept that anything that goes against the worldview that they want to propagate. So this highly reduces the credibility of science or scientism. They may say, we have space travel and screwdrivers. That was one example I gave yesterday. So many things they've discovered. But it highly decreases their credibility when they don't accept that there are important areas of advanced knowledge which they don't want to accept exists, and important phenomena which they just want to ignore. But even we're talking about ancient civilizations, I mean, even there are cathedrals in Europe more than 1,000 years ago, huge cathedrals, which were built before knowledge of geometry and calculus and engineering were supposed to have developed. That was only 1,000 years. That was supposed to be, all this came later. So even at that time, it seems they had, it seems, otherwise how did they build such huge cathedrals? But, and they just say, well, we don't know how they knew, and that's it. Later it was discovered, all these things. But wait a minute, there's clear evidence that people had to build such cathedrals. They must have to build, for instance, arches, huge arches, requires advanced knowledge of physics. You can't build that without an architectural plan, which must be based on knowledge of maybe you don't exactly express it in the modern terms, but they must have known it would work, because you don't set out to build a huge cathedral and just make it up as you go along. You have to have some plan how to do it. So they must have know what they're doing. But if we ask the modern architects or the historians of architecture, that, well, we don't know. And that's all. And then later on it was discovered how to do it. How is that? How is it that later they'll give credit to someone for discovering all things, these things, but already it's being done? So their whole idea, they just want to reduce everything to gross matter, materialism. Kimanyat, what else is there? Just there's atoms, molecules, energy, there's nothing more than this. Even the religion that they're opposed to, Orthodox religion in the West. When I say Orthodox, I don't mean Russian Orthodox, Greek Orthodox, but in the sense, what's another word for Orthodox? Mainstream? Mainstream, but traditional. Traditional religion in the West has been, in Christianity and Islam, which is not so much Western, but they've been very much opposed to what is called mysticism. They're very suspicious of that. There's the church or the ulema or whatever, and we believe this. This is how it is, and that people can have spiritual experiences. They're very suspicious of that. That everything should just come down from the church or there's the priests and they tell you what to do. Which, that's okay, theoretically, but we're not wholly opposed to that, but that individuals can have spiritual experiences Sometimes that's allowed by the church when it becomes too big a cult. Then they have, for instance, at Fatima, they put their imprimatur on it. Otherwise, they're very suspicious. Practically from the beginning, just we don't find in the New Testament any such thing. It's a very simplistic kind of religion. Though there's the Book of Revelations at the end, which is, I remember reading that as a kid. I read the whole Bible just to see what's in it. And I thought the last book is the Book of Revelations. And I thought, phew, this guy who wrote this, he must have been taking some heavy drugs. They almost didn't put it in the Bible. It would have been better if they didn't put it in. It might have saved a lot of wars, this idea that Jesus is coming and he'll throw everyone into hell. The beast. Very strange ideas. So that's somewhat mystical, but it's nasty mysticism. But things like meditation, seeing auras, kundalini, all the knowledge of this has come to the West. Lobsang Rampa, with his stories of Tibetan mysticism. So none of this, certainly this wasn't propagated by any religion. There's no program to make the Western world interested in mysticism, but there are people here and there who've written some books and people have taken up an interest in it. It's not that mysticism is wholly absent from Western culture, but it's definitely central to Eastern culture. Now, of course, reincarnation and karma. That's a very important point, understanding this, which is not there in the Abrahamic religions. It's a very poor theology, very poor understanding that when the body is born, life begins. And when you die, you either go to heaven or hell. It's so childish. And after that, there's no hope. That's just it. One lifetime, and if you say your Hail Marys, Ave Maria, then you go to heaven. If you're a Catholic, you believe that. And if you're a Protestant, you believe that. If you say Ave Maria, you go to hell. So it's very childish. No deep quest for understanding what is reality, what is actually what is the nature of life, of consciousness, of God, what is our relationship with God. Very poor, very shallow. So all these things, meditation, yoga, there are many millions of people in the Western world doing yoga, almost all for health, physical health purposes, but they all know that it has what we might call a spiritual background. Although there are efforts to de-link it from its spiritual background, for instance, by offering Christian yoga. Where did that come from? Christ, well, he was a yogi of sorts, but he wasn't teaching that do yogasanas. But all these things are coming in the Western world, and although neither the atheistic camp nor the traditional theistic camp, neither of them like it, but it is a major factor in modern culture. And you can't keep it out. It's become highly influential. It's not like there's any movement to propagate it. But out of interest, people have taken it up out of interest. Just like, for instance, all over the world, people like eating pizzas, which was invented sometime in the 20th century. Where? America. Yes. And it's become popular all over the world. Is there an organization, the Pizza Promotion Party? No, but people like it, so. It's not like Coca-Cola in which they're promoting it. There's no one specifically promoting pizzas, but people like it, so it's become popular. So no, it's not there's no movement to promote interest in what we could call Eastern mysticism, but there's increasing interest in it. It fulfills a need. And people can relate to that, just like that. If we tell people, you're not chemicals, you are not simply a bunch of chemicals. You are a spiritual being by nature. And many people, even without understanding what that means, they can relate to that in some way. Or traditional theism, that people, if I'm in trouble, God help me. Pray to God, God help me. And people can naturally relate to that. If we talk to them about Higgs boson or Schrodinger's cat and quantum theory and curved space-time. You know about that? Space and time, they're actually one phenomenon and it's curved. It's called science. People, they can't relate to it, but if you tell them, look, you're in trouble, pray to God. Oh, God, help me. So, why does religion persist? Well, it's communicable. A lot of what's called science isn't communicable. We can't even begin to visualize what all these things mean. People, they chant Hare Krishna, pray to God, do some meditation, and they can feel some effect is there. Now, the scientist may say that's illusion, but it's pratyakshavagamam dharmyam, it's directly experienced. And how will people, they may say, they may be told, well, it's just some reactions in your brain. But people get the understanding that I am a person. I have some need. God help me. Or relax with meditation. And they can feel there's something there. Whereas all these things, what are the different isotopes of silver or something? It's, what's it got to do with my life? It doesn't appeal to the soul. It might appeal to the mind of some people. Most people are not very interested in these things. And people have at different levels some kind of spiritual aspiration. And you can go on telling them that, well, you just descended from monkeys and all you are is just some chemicals with something going on in your brain. But people have spiritual feeling. People can sense that there's more to life just than getting born, growing old. Trivia. Most people spend their life just dealing with, just talking. Oh, how are you? Okay. You see, if you're walking on the street and someone's coming the other way and say, good morning, dobar dan, how are you? And if you stop to think, how am I? They're already past. They don't stop to ask, actually, how are you? They just say, how are you? They already went past. They're not actually expecting any reply. It's just life is very shallow. So many people, they want to go beyond this shallowness and find something more. Is there something more to just this materialistic civilization all around us? So the quest for the spiritual, that will continue despite atheistic propaganda. And although the Western civilization has promulgated scientism, and with their war machines and their weapons, cunning, have been able to dominate the world through mass media and scientistic education, still many people are not convinced that this is the best. There's more to life than simply watching TV. All the very shallow society. When the Westerners came to India, they found a very different kind of civilization, and one that in many ways was highly advanced, despite the fact that India's culture at that time was had been to a large extent destroyed by, what should we say, Islamism or Islam. There are instances where Muslims would come into a place, kill all the Brahmins, and then they'd find the whole library, huge libraries, and then say, well, and find the local people and say, well, explain to us. And they say, we don't know, the Brahmins know. They're the only ones who know. And so there's no one left to explain it. They might be interested in that knowledge, but the knowledge, even that's happening right up to the present day, that so many branches of knowledge in India are just dying out from lack of interest. So many old manuscripts are just rotting away. Every day, in the winter, someone will get some old manuscripts are sitting around, hundreds of years old, and it's cold, let's light a fire. And then there's so many branches of knowledge. I've come across people, they have some branch of knowledge and which has been passed down generation after generation after generation. There's a man, 80 years old. His sons are not interested to learn it because it takes years to learn. And if they learn it, what will they get from it? They won't get any money, they won't support their family, so they don't bother. So the man's 80 years old, he's going to die, and that knowledge will die with him. There's so many like that. So we can just imagine when the Westerners first went to, and they encountered a highly advanced civilization in so many ways. Especially the spiritual knowledge was something which they had no idea of. The metaphysical philosophy, the philosophy of the Upanishads, they had no idea of any. There's just nothing like that in the Western world. Of course, it's mostly interpreted in an impersonal way. And the Westerners had very little access to that anyway, because some of them might have learned Sanskrit, which is the language, and most of which the Brahmanas were the custodians of this knowledge. Discuss such knowledge in. They would, even though they would speak the local vernaculars also, but this knowledge was discussed in those languages. And they wouldn't, anyway, they weren't going to speak with these lechers. Most of the Indian people found the Westerners just uncivilized. They walk into the house with their shoes on, eat meat and drink wine, and they're completely uncultured kind of people. But anyway, in course of time, some of the Westerners, they began to appreciate what a tremendous spiritual culture is here. But then others from the West thought, wait a minute, we don't want, our people are going there. We are the ones with the advanced civilization. We don't want our people giving credit to others and showing that our Christianity is in, they've got something which we don't have. And so there was deliberate, systematic efforts to discount that there could be anything of value in traditional Indian knowledge and culture. That they did that for political purposes in order to maintain the myth of their own superiority and also to justify their being there in the first place. What are the British, just I'm wondering, you know, America is talking about Ukraine. What business they got in Ukraine? What's it got to do with them? So what's Britain doing in India? We're helping the people. For instance, by seeing that their weavers are so expert that we can never produce cloth of such quality. So, but we want to export cotton from our own mills. So what's the solution to this problem? Chop off all the weavers' thumbs so they can't do weaving anymore. So this kind of contribution Britain made to India. So that was one reason. But another reason that they felt they had to discount that India had such great knowledge and culture, not only in the spiritual field, but in many mundane sciences also, is that they had to maintain the myth that knowledge has to be discovered. We are discovering scientific discoveries. We discovered it. It's not that we come to India and find there are these superb temples, which ancient temples, which showed they had advanced knowledge of engineering. How could they? They could not have had advanced knowledge of engineering because they are primitive, right? Despite all evidence to the contrary. So what can we say? It's demoniac. Ancient knowledge of astronomy and mathematics in India comes from Shastra. And Shastra, in other parts of Shastra, explains that all this knowledge comes from the Purush, comes from the Supreme Lord. So in India, there's advanced ancient knowledge of highly advanced areas of science and mathematics and ancient paramparas teaching this and stating that this knowledge comes from a transcendental source. So it's very dangerous for scientism. So it had to be discounted. Okay, I'll plan on continuing this tomorrow. Hare Krishna.